Stage Dramas. The roar of the presses. Every week these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed, 15,000 an hour, until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly has gone through in full color. Great fiction, interesting features, factual articles, color illustrations. All these are to be found in every issue of the American Weekly. All these go to make up the nation's reading habit, another name for the American Weekly, which comes to you every week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. This week's front page drama, Murder Under the Northern Lights, is, as its name implies, a dramatic true-life story of the frozen North. Murder Under the Northern Lights is adapted from a double-page feature story of the same name, which will appear in next Sunday's American Weekly. Take our advice and don't miss it. Our story opens in the shortwave listening post of the radio room of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Headquarters in Ottawa, Canada. Inspector Martin is addressing a radio operator.
Now then, Constable Richard, what's all this wild talk about wholesale murders among the Eskimos?
I can't quite make it out myself, sir. But Ernest Riddell, the Hudson's Bay Company factor on Belcher Island, sent out the story by messenger and dog team to Constable McIntosh at the Great White River Post.
He has a shortwave radio transmitter there and relayed it on to us. Is that the idea?
Exactly, sir. I just had the post on the air.
Oh, well, that seems to be the trouble.
Well, sir, it's a wild tale about the Bible. 24th chapter of St. Matthew. The war, a ghost ship, an amazing display of northern lights.
Good Lord, what the deuce is wrong with McIntosh? Has he gone crazy? Well, what's the rest of it?
Something about Eskimo men, women, and children going out naked to a hilltop in 20 degrees below zero. A falling star.
Confound it, Richards. Is McIntosh or that Hudson's Bay chap trying to pull our leg?
I don't think so, Inspector. But it is a weird hodgepodge.
But what in the name of all that's holy has all this got to do with the murders they say have been committed?
That I don't know, sir. McIntosh went on about the second coming of Christ, a woman clubbing her child to death, and two men being shot dead. And that's about all, sir.
By the Lord, Harry, that's enough. Try to get in touch with Constable Dexter. He's seated in the Belcher Island.
I tried to, sir. But Dexter's up north with his dog team on winter patrol.
Well, then I suppose I'd better go up there and look into it. Sounds to me as if the whole Eskimo population has gone berserk. Get the airport at Captain Cashing and tell them to have skis ready to fit our plane. Tell them I'll be there early this afternoon.
Very good, sir.
No use, Inspector. This sudden thaw softened up the runway so badly it's impossible to take off with this load on skis.
Very well, Pilot St. John. You stay here with the plane until the ground hardens again. Temperature will drop sharply in a day or two. In the meantime, Mr. Kerr and myself will take the train and meet you at the Moose Factory and resume flight from there.
Very good, sir. I'll try to be there when you arrive.
Welcome, Inspector Martin. Welcome to Moose Factory.
Well, thanks, Father Sir. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
This is my interpreter, Mr. Kerr, Father Sir.
How do you do?
Monsieur Kerr.
Have you seen anything of my plane and pilot, Father?
No, Inspector, not yet. But Mr. Bradley, the schoolmaster here, he is down in the flat we call our airport, making for us a runway with some evergreens that we have dropped down. Your pilot, the radio, he was on his way here.
Well, Father, let's get over toward your handsome airport.
Oh, very well, Monsieur.
Tell me, what do you think of that weird tale of the Eskimo murders, Father?
Well, to say the least, Inspector, I am shocked. But, well, anything can happen up here in the unpredictable North. Ah, yes, mon ami, it is bien mysterious.
But what's your theory, Father? You've lived among these people.
Oh, no, monsieur. I have never lived among the Belcher Island Eskimos. But they live in the most bleak, barren place. And all the bad temper of the Arctic weather seems to concentrate about those islands. And if climate affects the character of a people at all, I am not surprised that murder should break out up there.
There's no denying that. The devils have nothing to live on but seal.
That is true.
Seal is meat, drink, fuel, clothing, harness, transportation to them.
Are we?
Even those skittish kayaks they use for boats are covered with seal hide.
Well, things go well with them when seals are plentiful, you know. But, oh, woe to them any winter when seals are scarce. And this winter, they have been very scarce.
And you think that is a bearing upon the murders, too?
Oh, but most certainly, Inspector. What puzzles me, though, is the reference to the Bible in the report of the murders.
Well, Mr. Kerr here tells me that 10 years ago, two missionaries went in there and left some Bibles translated into the syllabic alphabet invented for the Cree Indians and Eskimos.
Oh, yes, monsieur?
They quickly mastered the reading of these Bibles, and it gave them a smattering of Christianity.
I see. A little knowledge is sometimes very dangerous, Inspector.
Then you think some interpretation they may have placed in the Bible may have had something to do with the murders?
Maybe. Yes, I do. Something else that mystified me, though, was the utterance to the ghost ship.
Oh, that was the Hudson's Bay Company schooner, the Fort Churchill, that broke loose from her moorings in the dead of night some years ago, and before anyone knew it, she drifted away.
Yes, of course, yes.
The current carried her to one of the Belcher Islands, where she ran ashore and was broken up by the Eskimos for firewood and building purposes.
But tell me, what has that to do with the murder?
That I can't answer now. But the year it happened, seals had been very scarce, and the Eskimos were on the verge of starvation.
Oh, yes?
So that when the empty ship floated ashore, the Eskimos were sure it was the work of the Almighty God and gave up thanks accordingly.
Oh, I see. Yes.
There's my plane coming, Father.
Yes.
2-day journey even by air to the Belcher Island, so you can look for me back this way in about a week.
Very well, I won't, dear. I wish. Well, Inspector, I see you're right on the minute. You said you would be back in 1 week.
Glad to be back, Father. It was rather a hard trip.
Oh, you have your prisoners, I see.
Yes, Father, three of them. Jared Lark, Peter Quaritch, and the woman here, Nina.
I am very anxious to hear the story, Inspector. Could I offer to you the hospitality of my house?
Yes, thanks, I'd be delighted to join your father. Just as soon as I get the prisoners locked up, I'll be over to see you.
Okay.
Well, it's like this, Father.
Yes?
Ernest Riddell, the Hudson's Bay Company factor, has been telling the Eskimos of the terrible wars raging all over the world.
Yes.
Then this winter has been a scourge. Seals were scarce and famine set in.
I know.
10 of the Eskimos died of starvation. The others went lightheaded with hunger and all turned to the Bible for guidance. They gathered in the igloo of a half-breed named Charlie Kuchak, who became fired with a conviction that the Bible explained the crisis.
I read the good book. It say, and Jesus say unto them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us when shall these things be, and what shall be the signs of thy coming, and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered, ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars.
That be truth. White man, Mr. Riddell, tell us of wars.
For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famine.
True, true. We have no fields, no food. Brothers die. There is famine.
After the tribulations of those days shall the sun be darkened. The moon shall not give her light. And the stars shall fall from heaven.
You hear? You hear what good books say? Did we not all stand on hilltop and see the great stars fall last night?
You believe?
I believe. Ada, Ada, what say you? Do you believe?
What? We have had famines before, and bright stars fell before. Wars there have been. How is it this time different that you try to frighten us all?
It say here in good book that this time Christ is coming. We must make ready for him.
We must make ready for our guest. We must not meet him in soil first, but naked, as little children when they come to us from heaven. We must meet him under the sky. Come, shed your garments, and let us go to meet him.
Wait! If you go out naked and cold, and if he not come at once, will you not perish quickly? And if you have made mistakes, will you not perish for no good?
Wait, I read some more. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. But if an evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, the Lord of that servant shall cut him asunder.
Charles, stand there and come. They are evil servants.
They are evil servants. The Lord will cut them asunder.
Oh, you who know better than they. Come.
Yes, we come.
Joe, Peter, listen to me.
Yes.
The good book says Sam and Tom, they are evil servants. They must be cut asunder. They must do the Lord's work. Joe, see to Tom. Peter, see to Sam.
Tom, good book say, you evil servant.
What do you do? Put down
gun! No, you evil servant.
What for you shoot, kid Sam? Why you do this?
Like you, Sam, some be evil servants. Good book say you be cut asunder. Joe, he do Lord's work. I, too, do Lord's work.
Lord's work is not for the kid, brother.
Joe, where is my daughter Ada?
Huh?
She not come with me and others. You
maybe,
see her?
Maybe she still in igloo. She hide.
not want for go.
I go in. I find her. Ada! Ada, you here? I do not believe. I must believe. I must go for to perish in cold. I must believe Lord comes now.
You, my daughter, say this. You too be evil servant.
I do not know if I be evil, but I not go with you, my mother. I not believe the Lord comes now.
Then you be evil servant. And you too must be cut asunder.
I run away.
No.
No. Do you be my child?
It be evil servant. I golden Lord will.
Now I go meet master.
Some of the others set out to climb the steep slope of the white hill on the crest of which the small defendant band stood waiting naked in the snow. He was as naked as they.
Oh, Monsieur l'Inspecteur, c'est horrible, c'est tragique. Those poor, misguided souls.
As they waited in the bitter cold, more than 20 below, their eyes turned heavy with sleep. Soon came the merciful numbness that brings death.
Oh.
Came to all but me. She waited. Her faith kept her awake, alive. She waited for some sign, some strange vision that never came.
It might have been more merciful if she had gone to sleep with the others.
Yes, but when she realized her terrible sacrifice was all in vain, she turned and plodded stumblingly down the hill and sat on her knees at the entrance of her home.
Oh.
She was found, taken indoors, and restored to consciousness.
Tell me, what became of Joe and Peter, who shot and killed the two other Eskimos?
Well, the sight of the two bodies, suddenly lifeless in the snow, shocked them into a sense of what they'd done. They went to their igloos and waited to give themselves up.
You have just heard the front page drama, Murder Under the Northern Lights, adapted from a double-page feature story to be found in next Sunday's American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Dramas. The roar of the presses. Every week these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed. 15,000 an hour until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly has gone through in full color. Great fiction, interesting features, factual articles, and color illustrations. All these are found in every issue of the American Weekly, which comes to you every week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. This week's front page drama, Death Rides with the Funeral, is a dramatization of a true life story entitled Killed China's Cleverest Crook at His Own Funeral, which is but one of the many interesting stories to be found in next Sunday's American Weekly. Hans Bitterschlag, an ex-German army officer, has long been a thorn in the side of the Chinese authorities as well as the deadly Chinese bandits. For Bitterschlag himself was one of the most wily, ruthless bandits that ever lived. The Chinese nicknamed him Goba, which is a fungus that attacks wild rice. And he earned his nickname for the way he preyed upon and hijacked the wild rice, which is also a nickname bestowed upon Chinese bandits. Recently, under the cover of darkness, Hans Bitterschlag and his faithful partner in crime, Ivan Rushkin, a white Russian, secretly slipped into China's ancient capital, Beijing. In their carefully hidden headquarters, they discussed their plans.
So, you think it's a risky business coming here,
Ivan? Between the Japanese and the Chinese authorities, they are quite likely to be trapped.
No, Ivan. I'm much too clever for that. I have planned every detail of this little trip too carefully to be caught now. Ivan, this is to be my last job.
What? What is that you say, Hans?
Remember I told you a long time ago, once I made my pile, I would clear out of China?
go somewhere to live a life of ease and luxury.
Da, but you said you would need at least a million.
Yeah, Ivan. And I almost have it. A cool million in gold, precious stones, and jewelry. All stuff I can cash in on. This one big hole we make here will do it.
Mother of all the rocks. Then in that little hole in the ground near Shanghai, you have almost a million hidden away. But what if something should happen to you?
Well, then, Ivan, it was all to yours. For you and I are the only two people who know where my fortune is hidden. But don't let your mind dwell upon it. Nothing will happen to me. Wait. Here, let me find you.